Outkick the coverage with Clay Travis live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Drama out there for those of you waking up, much of it associated in the NFL with the quarterback position. Ben Roethlisberger takes a substantial pay cut to be able to continue to be the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He has saved basically $15 million for the team, and his pay will go to $14 million. And they have spread out cash payments in the years ahead. So Ben Roethlisberger will be back as the starting quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers. In the first hour of the program, I told you that even with Big Ben, I don't see the Steelers as a legitimate threat in the AFC North. I really don't. They can't run the football. Their offensive line is nowhere near as good as it used to be. Roethlisberger is a shell of himself. The wide receiving core, which is deep, is likely to be losing some players, including Juju Smith-Schuster. And I just don't believe that if you look at Roethlisberger and you consider the Steelers within the context of the AFC North, I think the Browns and their UFO-seeing quarterback, Baker Mayfield, are in the best shape of anybody in the AFC North. I think they're followed by the Baltimore Ravens, and then I've got the Pittsburgh Steelers slotted in as the third-best team, with, as usually has been the case or has often been the case over the last 20 years, the Cincinnati Bengals bringing up the rear. Now, I do think there's reason for optimism in Cincinnati over Joe Burrow, but in general, I believe in what the Browns are doing with Baker Mayfield and Kevin Stefanski. We'll see what happens with Odell Beckham Jr., but I like the young talent that they have put together on that team and their chances to have substantial success going forward. So I am not a believer that Ben Roethlisberger is going to get back to the Super Bowl and have a chance to win his third Super Bowl title. I think Big Ben, as good as the Steelers were in getting to 11-0, I think they are more likely to resemble the team that stumbled down the stretch than they are to resemble the 11-0 team. I think they're probably 8-8, 9-7 caliber in 2020 would be my prediction there. Drama continues also to build with Russell Wilson and what might happen with the Seahawks. Early on, I said this was madness. There was no way that they were actually going to consider moving on from Russell Wilson because of how talented he is, because of the fact that he is still relatively young, already won a Super Bowl, should have won two. If I had to choose between Russell Wilson or Pete Carroll, that is an easy call. I would move on from Pete Carroll and build around Russell Wilson. Instead, it seems as if the Seahawks are potentially interested in moving on. What kind of moving on scenario could make sense for the Seahawks? Well, I named a bunch of teams that I think could make sense for Russell Wilson. Chicago Bears, Washington Football Team, potentially the Dallas Cowboys. The number of teams, maybe even the New England Patriots, that should be interested in Russell Wilson is massive because he's a relatively young quarterback still, particularly when you consider the Drew Breeses, the Tom Brady's, the Ben Roethlisberger's of the year, of the and how old they are and how many years they've been able to play. Russell Wilson still relatively young, and he seems like a great teammate that the situation has just spoiled him in Seattle, and he wants to move on. I wouldn't trade him. Again, I would pick Russell Wilson over Pete Carroll, but it doesn't seem like the Seahawks are going to make that move. So maybe they trade straight up for quarterbacks. Maybe there's a move where Russell Wilson goes down to the Raiders and the Raiders trade for Derek Carr. Maybe there's a situation, crazy as it may sound, where you could see a guy like Deshaun Watson and a guy like Russell Wilson maybe trading places. I don't know. Is it insane? A little bit. Maybe there's a three-way trade that could make a lot of sense involving the Jets or the Dolphins. There are so many different destinations that I believe should be in play for both Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson that one of these things that's interesting to me is, think about this for a minute now. What if the Seahawks traded away Russell Wilson and didn't even get that much back in exchange for him? let's just say they got one first round pick, and let's say the Washington football team was able and willing to give up their first round pick for Russell Wilson, but you took all of his contract off your books, are you telling me that then the Seattle Seahawks couldn't potentially try and put together a trade to go get Deshaun Watson? Think about that for a minute now. Think about if you traded away Russell Wilson, got back draft picks, and were able to put together some draft picks. I know the Seahawks have tended to trade away their draft picks, but let's presume you could put together a package. You think Deshaun Watson might want to play alongside of DK Metcalf? I think he might like that idea. I think there would be a ton of quarterbacks that would fall all over themselves to potentially be in Seattle. Imagine if you just traded away Russell Wilson, you get one first rounder, two first rounders, whatever it is, you take that money off your salary cap, and you then are in a position to either go draft a new quarterback or, in what could be a wide open free agency marketplace, maybe you make a run at Deshaun Watson. Maybe you make a run at Derek Carr, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston. Is there somebody out there that you believe could be a difference maker, or even wilder? You heard me float the idea of Drew Brees maybe being interested in moving on somewhere else. What if Drew Brees saw that situation in Seattle? I just think there are so many different potential dramatic moves that could be made at the quarterback position before all is said and done, that this to me is incredibly riveting theater for the NFL as we move closer to the start of the new league year and what is expected to be a ton of veterans that are going to be cut next week because of salary cap related issues. GMs are going to make moves and always have been making moves that make sense in free agency. But man, we're going to have a free agency like we've never seen before, I think, next week in the NFL. And obviously the draft is a place to build teams, but I think there's going to be a lot of talent that is out there on the marketplace for a lot of different NFL teams. And it may involve, even include, it looks like now, Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson. I think Jimmy G is done in San Francisco. Maybe Drew Brees could be potentially done in New Orleans. I'm telling you, I think there are going to be some jaw-dropping moves made next week, and I can't wait to see what all of them are going to be. So there is your lead as we begin the third hour of the program. For those of you who are listening to finish off the second hour, Dub, I said I was going to bring you in reports from Baker Mayfield himself that he saw a UFO. Colin Cowherd had some fun with this yesterday and said, you know, Tom Brady basically would never talk about seeing a UFO. And then Tom Brady, who is incredible now on social media, hops in and says, how do you know I've never seen a UFO, Colin? Which is funny in and of itself. Do you believe in UFOs, Dub?
I do believe in UFOs. Ghosts, on the other hand, look, and I know you've had your experiences with ghosts.
I'm a ghost and a UFO guy.
I'm a strong UFO believer. One of my favorite television shows to watch is Ancient Aliens. I just find it absolutely fascinating. However, and you mentioned Tom Brady on Twitter. He's got to be at the top of the list of the quarterback Twitter power rankings nowadays.
I think it's just athletes close. In general. Yeah, I'm not sure that there's anybody. Look, there are people with much bigger audiences than Tom Brady, right? I mean, there just are. Entertainers. Celebrities, whatever it might be. But in terms of just using social media to make himself infinitely more likable, is there an athlete that has used social media better than Tom Brady? I mean, that's like, I feel like we can do a whole, a big discussion on that at some point next week. And in fact, I'm jotting down athlete, social media power rankings. Because look, there are people out there who use social media and have big audiences in the world of athletics. LeBron James is one, for instance. But I don't think that LeBron has made himself substantially different or more likable on social media than he is already, right? I think Tom Brady has changed the way that many people out there see him, right? In a very positive way, using social media in a way that makes him much more likable than he otherwise would be. And can you think of an athlete that has used social media better than Brady has?
Off the top of my head, no. But to your point, I mean, there's got to be a significant number of people that have just absolutely hated Tom Brady for years. And just recently, solely because of his social media posts, have probably come around and like, you know what? I kind of like this guy now.
I'll put myself in that category. I was, and for most of his career, have continued to be. Everybody had to choose back in the day. Are you a Brady guy or are you a Manning guy? Well, I grew up a University of Tennessee fan. Peyton Manning went to the University of Tennessee. He had my loyalty from the moment he stepped into the NFL. I wanted him to do well. And the rivalry between Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, I was a Manning guy. And Peyton Manning did a fabulous job of turning himself into sort of an everyman hero by branding himself as a regular guy in all those commercials. I think partly because I legitimately believe that Cooper and Peyton and Eli are all pretty funny dudes, right? Like Cooper Manning in particular, whose son Arch Manning is going to be one of the top college football recruits in the country, I think in the class of 2023. Cooper Manning, I think, is absolutely hysterical. And he's done a good job, I think, helping them with the SNL skits, you know, when they've hosted both Peyton and Eli. Those, and just the commercials in general. I mean, Peyton Manning is still a popular corporate spokesperson even today, and he hasn't played in several years, 5 years now, I think. And so I think that Manning did a better job branding himself through commercials, but Peyton Manning is still not on social media. Meanwhile, Tom Brady has absolutely killed it on social media. I think he's made himself much more likable. And maybe Baker Mayfield's going to do the same thing with all of his UFO talk. When we come back, we'll be joined by Todd Furman. He went out to Hawaii last week. I'm curious what he thought of Hawaii. We'll talk with him. We'll also break down NBA, NFL, draft, and more as we look towards the NCAA tournament. Big discussion there. Who are the teams that should be favored? All that and more. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's me, three-time Pro Bowler LeVar Arrington, and I couldn't be more excited to announce a new podcast called Up On Game. What is Up On Game, you ask? Along with my fellow Pro Bowler TJ Houshmandzadeh and Super Bowl champion, yep, that's right, Plexico Burress. You can only name a show with that type of talent on it, Up On Game. We're going to be sharing our real-life experiences loaded with teachable moments. Listen to Up On Game with me, LeVar Arrington, TJ Houshmandzadeh, and Plexico Burress on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Furman, appreciate you getting up early with us here. A bunch of different things I want to get into, but I want to start with Hawaii because I've never been to Hawaii. I actually don't spend much time on Instagram, but I saw you post a bunch of different photos from your trip to Hawaii. You had never been before. How would you assess your trip to Hawaii, especially for a lot of people out there who probably are like me and have also never been?
A heck of a lot better being there 2 weeks ago than earlier this week when you had a tsunami warning. I'll tell you that.
No kidding.
I highly encourage anybody who doesn't want to leave American soil, who wants to feel like they're out of the States. Hawaii is hands down a place unlike anywhere else you can go in the continental 48. I mean, I've traveled some spots internationally, but was blown away, honestly, with more of the natural surrounds and everything else. The one thing I was disappointed by was I couldn't come back from Hawaii, even being there a full week, with a better tan than you were able to compile in Mexico, even though I think you were on Mexican soil for what, about 48 hours, 72 hours before they kicked you out?
You know, it was fun. We got down there on Wednesday afternoon, evening, and came back on late Sunday night. So I was down there four nights, and I had an amazing time. You know, Schwartz was down there, who I know you know, with his wife, and so we had a good dinner on Saturday. It's second year in a row, because last year at this time, Cousin Sal and his family were down there, and so we ended up hanging out with them. Neither one of those situations were planned. It was just like, hey, we ended up at the same place. But we had a fabulous time. I mean, it was, it's just, I mean, I'm a warm weather guy. So you've known me for a long time. I like shorts. I like flip flops. I like t-shirts. There's not a lot of activity. You know, I don't like to dress up. I definitely don't like cold weather. Although we're scheduled to be in Utah in the near future here, which will be interesting to see how exactly that goes, which I've never been to for skiing and snowboarding and everything else. But I'm jealous about the Hawaii trip because I've been wanting to go for a while.
Yeah, highly recommend it for all the listeners out there that are looking to try and find a spot to sneak off to. I will say we did have a unique experience the Monday we were there because of some of the COVID protocols. So to go to Hawaii now, you have to test negative for COVID 72 hours or at least within a 72-hour window before you leave. So yeah. We did all that before we left Las Vegas. We got to the Big Island or to Oahu, connected there. We're in Kona for about 36 hours, which is the Big Island. Unbeknownst to us, we had to test negative again to get to Maui. So we land in Maui, don't have a negative COVID test. They go, hold on a second, you can't be here. We had to jump on a separate plane, fly back to Honolulu, get tested at the airport, wait about 5 hours, jump on another plane to get to Maui. So that was the only fly in the ointment in terms of not knowing exactly what rules and regulations there were. So we gave a day on vacation, but...
Shouldn't they have told you before you got on the plane that you needed
You would think that was some of the details, but they were a little bit vague. We were under the understanding that as soon as you got to an island that you were fine. I didn't know that if you switched islands, you still had to have that 72-hour window open. I know Kauai has been a little bit stricter than some of the other spots. Not only do you have to have that negative test before you're there, you have to quarantine for 72 hours and then have a negative test again. So that was part of the reason we put that particular island on the back burner. But little to say, we gave up one extra day, and I know the Honolulu airport inside and out if anybody needs a floor map or me to try and find or recommend some of the particular eateries they have there.
It's interesting. We had to get tested in order to get out of Mexico, but they didn't actually test us in the United States, by which I mean you show the fact that you are a negative test in order to be able to board in Mexico. But they don't do anything, at least not the airport we went through Houston, at least not at the airport we went through in Houston. They took those forms in Mexico. So that makes some sense to me because if you're going to allow somebody to board a flight, you shouldn't let them board the flight if they're not allowed to go to the place they're going to, right? Like that seems like a reasonable sort of process that should be in place.
You would think that there's some normal checks and balances, but I feel like everybody doing things a little bit differently. But it is good and comforting to know that everyone in the U.S. trusts all the tests that are handed out in various ports along the country of Mexico for you to gain entry back in the state. I'm thoroughly convinced that there's some level of skepticism about the accuracy of the test you actually took.
Well, not my test in particular. My wife actually has the same theory as you. She's like, why would Mexico want us to stay here? Like, they want
they may not. They may... I don't know. They may want more U.S. tourist dollars the way things have gone. So if there's possibility, that could definitely be the
case. That's an interesting angle.
To take full advantage, get you guys to buy a few more trinkets and such, and take advantage of another 42 hours.
We're talking to my co-host on Fox Bet Live, Todd Furman, at Todd Furman on Twitter. You can find him there. Did you get any good tips? I think the last time you were on was before you left for Hawaii, and I told people to throw tips your way. I think I saw I was tagged in a few of those. Did anybody give you a great Hawaiian suggestion before you went?
Oh, they did an outstanding job. I mean, unfortunately, we weren't able to partake in some of them. One individual, and I apologize to all the loyal listeners out there, suggested we go for a night swim with the manta rays. That was a hard no for the girlfriend. She wanted no part of that. We did do a little bit of snorkeling at Molokai Crater, and we ended up sneaking a reservation last minute into a place called Mama's Fish House that came highly recommended. So your listeners knew the hot spot. We took full advantage and are excited to go back and explore some of the other Hawaiian islands we weren't able to go to, hopefully in the not-so-distant future.
I think we're on all over Hawaii. You know, it's super late, obviously, at night for us there because they're so far behind in terms of the hours. But I hear a lot of positive feedback. So if you're listening to us in Hawaii right now, you can drop me a line. And I want to get out there at some point, I promise. Okay, so let's go into the gambling markets right now. First of all, are you blown away by how white-hot sports gambling is in the country right now? Because I'll tell you the truth, every morning when I'm doing this show, I'm subscribed for a couple of different, you know, kind of sports business newsletters, and I'll scroll through to see, you know, what the news of the day is. And it feels like every single day there's a new partnership, a new purchase, something going on every single day in the world of sports gambling.
I'm trying to figure out where all this money is coming from, to be quite honest. It feels like every time you read an article, there's a $500 million deal. There's a billion-dollar valuation. While I know stock prices are climbing through the roof for all the gaming companies, whether it's the one we work for and Flutter and some of their biggest competitors out there, it's simply staggering to see how deep their pockets are and what these companies are doing to begin establishing market share. The one concern I do have is that as the space has grown a lot more popular, there's a ton of misinformation that gets circulated, not so much on the business reporting side. I think those guys for the Fox Business, the CNBC crew, and everybody else who's been in and around understands how to report the black and white, but just the misinformation when it comes to sports gambling itself and the day-to-day machinations, it's a little bit disconcerting, and I think it's our part, or at least the best we can do, to try and help break up some of those misconceptions that may be out there.
We're talking to Todd Furman. Let's go into the NCAA tournament. Last year's NCAA tournament canceled. Now we are able to circulate back around, and we've got the NCAA tournament theoretically going to be played in a relatively normal fashion, albeit with everything taking place around the Indianapolis area. What we've seen so far in sports, Todd, Tampa Bay Lightning, the Alabama Crimson Tide, Tampa Bay with Tom Brady, which I think is fair to say, the Lakers with LeBron, all of the favorites are winning. Major League Baseball with the Dodgers. All of your champions are teams that were near the top. And maybe you can say the Buccaneers aren't, but I feel like with Tom Brady, he's like the least likely underdog ever. So I'm going to kind of count him. Do you anticipate with the Zags, Gonzaga, and also with Baylor at the top, and maybe Michigan as well, and then a fairly substantial drop-off? Is this a chalk NCAA tournament, or is this the league that finally has some chaos?
I don't want to say there's going to be a ton of chaos. Inevitably, we'll have a couple of upsets early on. You'll see a couple of programs that are a bit flawed from some of the power conferences go down and really raise some eyebrows. But when you talk about Gonzaga, and we always have questions, will the Bulldogs be ready to go when the lights are the brightest? Because they go through the West Coast Conference and don't have to really get tested from when the calendar hits January up until they get into the deeper portions of March Madness. But this feels like a different Gonzaga team. And when you go through the non-conference resume that they compiled, you know, you beat West Virginia early on in the season. You absolutely boat race Virginia. And I don't know the last time a team even flirted with the century mark against the Tony Bennett defense. And you took care of Kansas right out of the gates. So I think Gonzaga this year, if they can't finally get over the hump and win a national championship, it may never happen. And you talk about the chalk and veteran leadership both on the floor and as far as the head coaching box. I mean, this Zags team really has it all in that particular regard. Baylor, I'm interested to see. I mean, this is a team that had a 20-plus day break, didn't look nearly as dynamic earlier this week in their overtime win against West Virginia. But if they can regain some of that form and swagger, no reason to believe that Scott Drew's team can't be there at the end, although I do question some of his coaching. Michigan is one I'm a lot more skeptical of. Juwan Howard's never had this much pressure or expectations. He's still pretty young in terms of his coaching tenure there. And while he does have a veteran in Phil Martelli that handles a lot of responsibilities as well, I wouldn't be shocked at all if Michigan was a team that got upset before we ultimately got to the Final Four.
Do you buy into the Big Ten as being head and shoulders above every other Power Five conference?
I do. In terms of overall depth, you watch these teams on a night-in, night-out basis, and whether you want to make a case for Michigan being the best, you'd be hard-pressed to do so, given the dominant performance we saw from Illinois. Whether it's Iowa with Luka Garza most likely going to be the national player of the year, or an Ohio State team that's reeling a little bit as we head into their regular season finale against the Illini. All four of those teams, when they're playing their best, are as good, if not better, than any quartet of teams that you could find in another power league around the country. And we can't sleep on the likes of a Wisconsin or Purdue that, if they get the right brackets, can be very difficult outs given how tenaciously they defend. The one power league that, if you asked me to pick the best team or who I thought could make the deepest run, and I have no clue, would be the SEC. I'm not quite sure if Alabama or Arkansas are the best teams, or maybe you get a Missouri team that we saw knock off Florida outright earlier this week, be a team that can put it all together and maybe get into that second weekend or deeper.
We're talking to my co-host, Fox Bet Live, Todd Furman. You can follow him on Twitter, at Todd Furman. When you look at the NBA and the NHL, I think what we're going to see in short order is a lot of different teams dramatically increasing the capacity for crowds, predicated to a large extent on which state and or city they happen to be in. That is, teams that might be in Texas or Florida likely to have far less substantial restrictions than teams that might be in New York and in California in terms of fans. As an odds maker and someone who is trying to break down advantages and sort of find angles to play, do you start to think about the home court advantage potentially becoming an issue as we move into the Stanley Cup playoffs and also the NBA race to the championship? Or do you continue to break it down like you did last year, where basically the fan and home court advantage is not substantial in any way?
No, I think it will play a role. There's no doubt about it. I think when you go into some of these buildings, and I had the chance earlier this week to go to a Golden Knights game, it's an eerie feeling almost when there's right around 2,000 fans in a venue where you've grown accustomed to seeing 18,000 people, creating one of the more electric home ice advantages in all the NHL since the franchise played its first game a couple of years ago. So it's not as pronounced, but you've heard players say it. It's become a little bit unusual because they haven't had a play in front of fans, whether they're their own or go into hostile territory against the opposition. So I think as far as the NHL is concerned, I don't want to make a massive adjustment there because we've seen road teams have success in the playoffs. But as far as the NBA is concerned, there's no doubt about it that if you're talking about a Utah Jazz team having, you know, maybe 8,000 to 10,000 fans in attendance, it's going to be a lot tougher to play in Salt Lake City than it could be to go into Staples Center for the Lakers and Clippers if they're not able to have some of the purple and gold, or in the case of the Clippers, red, white, and blue clad fans to cheer them on for a playoff run.
No doubt. Because right now the Jazz would be the overall number one seed in the Western Conference right now, and they might have 50% capacity, which would mean that they have a substantial home court advantage. And let's say they're playing against the Lakers or the Clippers that might not be allowed to have any fans present at all. That's a pretty substantial difference when you think about a seven-game series, isn't it?
It definitely changes the dynamics, and you start to begin to build in much more of an adjustment for home court advantage than what you've been currently doing during the regular season as a handicapper. And so I think, you know, when you look at the NBA and the NHL, they'll be the last dominoes where we'll have questions about what kind of attendance will be out there. I really expect the deeper we get into the summer, Major League Baseball, you'll have venues at least 50% capacity, if I'm being optimistic. And we know the NFL has held out in releasing their schedule and trying to figure out if they'll go to the seventh game, probably waiting to show that, hey, look, we want to be playing in front of 60 or 70,000 fans, and we can get business back to normal, much like we saw every year up until this recently completed COVID season.
We're talking to Todd Furman, my co-host, Fox Bet Live. So let's go into kind of looking ahead for the draft, right? There are suddenly, depending on the jurisdiction that you're in, opportunities to bet a lot surrounding the NFL draft. I love it because the draft is almost like its own season. And this year we don't have the combine, where there were a lot of combine prop bets in the past couple of years. Do you enjoy and or like the idea of NFL draft betting, or do you find it to be not as fun or enticing as other opportunities?
It's a very different style betting market in terms of trying to identify an edge. Obviously, we know that you have to pay a massive price if you want to bet Trevor Lawrence to be the number one overall pick for the Jaguars. So that's not where you're going to try and train some of your attention. But typically what you're going to want to do is you're going to bet a lot of these players over, because the best case scenario is oftentimes what sports books will lay out for the marquee players. And I can't tell you how many times you've seen players draft position, you know, somewhere in the mid-teens, and they don't go till the 50s or 60s. So you have to put a little bit of your conference bias on the line and really do some homework. If you're able to do reading and try and figure out exactly what some of these teams' individual needs are, you can make a few bucks. At the same time, there's a reason professional bettors don't spend a ton of time on it, just because the limits are more for a recreational clientele, and you're going to see fewer dollars in play than what you would for, say, a regular season game, let alone playoffs or anything else.
Do you think you live in Vegas now? You've lived in Vegas for a long time. When we first started hanging out and meeting, you would get off a plane in Las Vegas if you were someone like me flying in from a place like Tennessee, and Vegas would offer you opportunities that didn't exist elsewhere, whether that be to gamble, you know, sitting playing blackjack, or for what we do, you gamble on sports, right? What do you think the impact of massively legalized sports gambling will be on the draw for sports gambling in Vegas. And let me give, before you answer, I'll give you an example. We're doing in Nashville a March 19th Outkick party on the Friday that the NCAA tournament starts. We're going to have hundreds of people hanging out with us watching games, and every single person there will be able to pull out their phone and bet on every game that is going on in the NCAA tournament for the first time ever. That used to be an exotic, incredibly awesome feeling to be able to do in Vegas. It made the Las Vegas experience particularly unique and put, for many people out there who are listening to us right now, on their sports bucket list was go to Vegas for the NCAA tournament so you can bet on all the games that are going on. I've done it. I bet a large percentage of our audience had either done it or planned to do it at some point in their lives. Now, there are a lot of places you can go. I mean, you can drive down to where I'm going to be in Nashville, Tennessee, and place every bet as soon as you cross the state line. You don't have to get on a plane and get all the way to Vegas. What's the impact going to be? Obviously, this year is a pandemic year still, but as you look forward to the sports gambling universe of Vegas as it compares to all the other states where it's going to be legal.
You know, maybe it's a little pie in the sky or Pollyanna that I want to be optimistic that it won't have a seismic impact in terms of Vegas business, especially during the month of March, knowing that March Madness along with the Super Bowl are two of the busiest times as far as sports betting is concerned. Because the way you lay that out there, I can make the case that, yes, sports betting is legal in a number of those states, but if you were to walk into a sports bar anywhere on Broadway or throughout Nashville, there are going to be a lot of people that were still able to bet the games. They were just doing it on mobile apps with their corner bookies, instead of the more regulated shops where they trusted the legitimacy of everything that was going on. The other thing that Vegas will have to do to continue to offer that amenity package is try and, you know, really appeal to folks who want to spend time in nightclubs and marquee restaurants and a lot of other things that you won't get, even as we see the proliferation of sports gambling elsewhere. But for those folks who don't want to spend a lot of money on airfare or costly hotels, there's no doubt you can go to other states with legalized sports betting and get a slightly different atmosphere. Because I can tell you, if you're a country music fan and you want to go see cover bands and bet college basketball, you're much better off in Nashville for the NCAA tournament than you would be coming out here.
It is interesting in general to think about how the different vibes are going to change. It used to be the city of Nashville sometimes jokingly called itself Nash Vegas when it was a much smaller city. Now, when you're out in downtown Broadway, Nashville, as the pandemic kind of disappears and COVID recedes and people are able to go out and listen to live music, gamble on sports, drink heavily, party, it does feel a little bit like Broadway in downtown Nashville with all the glitz and glamour is some version of the Strip out in Vegas. Todd Furman, we will talk to you again hopefully soon. Enjoy the games, and I'll see you on television later today.
Always a pleasure, my good man.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Several different things that I want to hit here to make you have hopefully a little bit of a smile on your face about things getting back to normal in the world of sports. First of all, the Atlanta Braves yesterday announced that they were planning for 100% full attendance for Major League Baseball's All-Star Game on July the 13th. I believe that that could be the first truly major sporting event to have 100% fan attendance in it. It comes on the heels of the NFL saying, or the NFL Hall of Fame game saying that they hope to have full attendance in early August with the first preseason game on the 2021 schedule. So that is an incredibly positive story. Also, the Big Ten, which has not allowed any fans to be present for any of its athletic events for an entire year, is going to allow 8,000 fans to be present at Lucas Oil Stadium for the Big Ten tournament next week in Indianapolis. That is big and positive news going forward. Also, we talked about the state of Texas and the state of Mississippi opening up, but this is also a substantial story that I think probably surprises a lot of people. The state of Connecticut has announced that effective March the 19th, they will be lifting all capacity limits on restaurants, retail, libraries, personal services, indoor recreation, gyms, museums, offices, and house of worship. As Texas had already done starting March the 10th, all of these restrictions, it appears, are going to diminish in a hurry in many different parts of the country as quickly as much was shut down. Much will, I believe, actually start to open back up. And we will see, I think, sooner rather than later, 100% capacity for some sporting events going forward. So I believe, look, because this week the Biden administration said anybody who wants a vaccine can have one by May 31st. I think by June 1st, it's going to be hard to argue that anybody who wants to go to a sporting event shouldn't be able to do it. And we'll see how many people are actually interested in doing that. But again, when Connecticut is lifting as many restrictions as they are, and Texas is, those are two very different states. It's not like people are like, oh, I don't know if I'm in Connecticut or Mississippi. Also, with Mississippi lifting all of its restrictions, I think things are going to get back to normal very, very quickly. And a big part of getting back to normal is having 100% fan capacity for many different sporting events, not just sporting events, by the way. I think also 100% fan capacity if people want to go to concerts, people want to go to Broadway plays, if you want to go to a movie. All of our entertainment is going to return, hopefully, sooner rather than later, back to almost 100% normalcy. So that is all very positive. I want to leave you with some good news as we roll into the weekend. Big week of NFL free agency movement, I believe, that's going to happen next week with a lot of different people being released as we get ready for the start of the NFL season, meaning the official start of the NFL year, I should say. And that is going to be a lot of fun to watch. Your team will convince you that they are making brilliant moves and everything is going to get infinitely better, even though they're probably going to be very similar to how they were last year, but hope springs eternal in the NFL. Also, by the time we come back on Monday, it'll be conference tournament week, and we'll be getting ready for the one-year anniversary of everything shutting down. If you remember the Rudy Gobert testing positive in Oklahoma and everything shutting down as a result, we are basically 6 days from that having occurred. And I know the month last year of March and April and May, it seemed like it lasted forever. But it is remarkable to think that we have made it through a full year since effectively everything started to shut down on March 11th of last year in the world of sports. And certainly, I think all of you in the years ahead, I think we'll look back and we'll be like, man, can you believe that we had sports talk radio every day for 3 hours and your crew here didn't miss a single day and there was no sports going on for March and April and May and into June as well? It is it's pretty wild to think about. But I believe 100% fan attendance sooner rather than later. Lots of reason for optimism. I hope you guys have fantastic weekends as you roll into your Friday morning and on into Saturday and Sunday. I'm out to camp. Wish your boy well. I hope it's not going to be too cold. I've got three different kids with me on this camping trip tomorrow. Go subscribe, as always, to our podcast on Spotify or iTunes. Search out Clay Travis. Search out OutKick. Thanks for hanging with us here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.